views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Code Breakers. This is Paradox. Today we're going to be discussing do African Americans benefit from living under the white power structure? In our description today, we have a few questions that we're going to ask. We will be discussing the expression of blackness under racism, white supremacy. Are people who classify themselves as white really in charge? Can people of color on this planet free themselves from whiteness? What do we own? What do we control? Who can we free? What does this mean and why? And just some examples around, do we believe that celebrating things like holidays, voting, etc., should we consider that offensive as far as the non-white people go? I think I do have DC and T on the line. You fellas there?
Greetings, greetings, greetings. Can I be heard?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Greetings, 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 greetings.
Is T on the line?
Hello, 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 listeners.
Yeah. He's online. So let's cue it up, man. Are we going to go into the first question, or you want to kind of like discuss just some general topics real quick? How do you want to cue it up?
If you want to go ahead and just express whatever you got, go ahead and get it going, and we can jump to some of the questions and play some of the clips. Play a couple of clips too. So,
well, cool. Just stated. You know, the general question that is asked is, do black people, or let me just make sure that I had this right, do African Americans benefit from living under racism, white supremacy? And I guess, you know, with that general thesis, I guess we can kind of look at it in a variety of ways, and one of the ways that I would generally look at that is that yes, we do benefit, but it's to our own detriment. So what do I mean by that? We are provided the things that, you know, people need to survive, food, shelter, clothing. There are things that people need to survive on the planet. You know, shelter and food being the primary thing. And the system, the way it's been set up, has afforded people that's been dominated by, you know, what we agreed to be the primary dominant structure on the planet, white supremacy, have offered an actual system to provide people that they have oppressed or taken things from to benefit within the system. So I guess that's just my beginning statement before we get deeper into it. So T, what's your general statement, or do you just want to kind of go into the next question?
Well, I mean, as far as I think I take a position on it and say, well, any society or civilization, just or unjust, I think it behooves the rulers of that society or civilization to build in certain comforts or conveniences for those they rule. And there are a number of reasons for that, which maybe we can get into later, but I think those particular reasons will actually manifest the type of society that comes out of that, whether it actually is in fact just or unjust. So I'll just kind of put that in the air for now. See where you all want to take it from there.
Just or unjust, huh? That was a very two key words. Definitely, this system is definitely unjust. I know that for sure.
I agree.
I think that when you look at the question itself, though, you're thinking, are there any benefits from it? I wonder as well, does that assist in confusion, right? So as long as you're benefiting from an environment, you're not necessarily going to you're going to pass, not everybody obviously, but many people I think will do what they have to do to basically assimilate, right? You know, get along, make sure that they follow rules correctly, that they follow the structure, they follow the rules and those, and then look for the benefits actually from the environment. In a strange way, you tend to, I tend to, you know, kind of just not pay attention to the mistreatment part or not pay attention to the unjust part. You know, you're kind of trying to find your lane, try to minimize as much interaction or let me say as much exposure as you can as you assimilate. Y'all have any thoughts on that?
T, do you have anything?
As far as benefits are concerned, like I said, I think in my opinion the benefits, which I kind of tie in with conveniences and comforts, certain comforts, those actually determine how that society operates overall. So, for instance, you have a society like we, I think everyone on this call can agree, and I would say our listeners too, for the most part, most likely would agree that this is an unjust system that we live under. It's based on people's skin color. Okay, so what that sets up is, well, let's say, for instance, you have a certain comfort in let's say housing, right? But within that, within the housing, you have, and this is obviously a resultant of the bigger issue, which is racism, white supremacy, that is the main controlling factor, but there are a lot of controlling factors that fall up underneath of that. It's almost like a circle within a circle within a circle, and you have certain levels. So take, for instance, housing, where you have, which too, I'm sure still goes on today, even though it's swept under the rug and a lot more hush-hush, I'm sure, but redlining or blockbusting tactics that people will likely say are those are things in the past, but they are certain comforts that are afforded by those people who benefit from the redlining or the blockbusting. And what that just solidifies the unjust actions of the system. So that's what I mean by the benefits or the comforts that are provided just strengthen that particular system. So that's one example. We could take another example and say, well, maybe in a just system, and no one really knows what this looks like because we, you know, as far as I know, no one has lived under a just system. So let's say, for instance, you had a system where it was based on education of the individual and essentially learning them from birth and what aligns with what they're best at. So this person is good at, you know, music, art, they might be good at math, and you work with that person to strengthen them in that area. And when you bring them into the collective as a whole, everyone builds on what they're good at, and then your whole goal of the society, let's say, is justice, but it's tied in with advancing humans as a whole in terms of their knowledge base, learning more about the universe, about themselves. That is an example of a just system, I think, that within those items that are provided in terms of education, in that essence that I provided, show and solidify the position of a just society.
Agreed. I think that, and I guess I want to kind of like, I guess we can kind of get into it. You know, the question is almost like a trolling question, right? So, you know, do African Americans benefit from living under white power structure? So you can ask that question in a group of people that will fall under the classification or forced into the classification of black, the destination of blackness. And of course, you would get all kinds of different answers. Some people will be like, well, why are you giving so-called white people power? Well, because they dominate everything. You talk English. I talk English. But clearly, this is not our origin, primarily. What do you mean? They ended tribalism. Now we call it racism. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into it.
Go ahead.
What were you about to say?
I was going to say, can you real quick just explain what destination, black destination means for the audience?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I have came up with this idea of blackness and I think of it in a different term now as far as what blackness is. I think that when we say black people, we take for granted that we're all in agreement as far as like what our perspective is, what's happening to us, and clearly that is not the case. So when I say blackness, I mean a destination. I mean that there are a lot of different ways people get there, but I think that there's some kind of, you know, destination or ending point as far as like the whole definition, which is inclusive, not exclusive. And that's due to the powerlessness of the group that's forced into that definition of blackness. I don't think that everybody that falls under the classification of blackness consider themselves black even. So, but is it a political term and also a militarized term of grouping people together by force? You know, the people in the Congo are not the people in South Africa. The people in South Africa are not the people in Madagascar. The people in Madagascar are not the people in Brazil that are classified as black or fall under the definition of black. The people in Brazil are not the people in the United States. Hell, the people in the southern United States are not the people in the northern United States. I mean, black people in Washington, D.C. are not like the black people in Baltimore, Maryland. So, I mean, however you want to divide this thing up, you can do it. But you know, just to be on a serious note, I think that blackness to me is a destination, not a term that is going to be any kind of agreeance.
So do you consider if we chose to so do you consider certain terminology, I guess, divisive? So if I try to position myself and say, well, since I came through based off my research, since I came through chattel slavery, through the transatlantic slave trade, and I know that to be, that's my position, that specific experience, even though it's unique on the planet, I still should not try to use that to create division amongst a person who just comes, who, you know, who was born in what they now call Kenya, have a particular type of experience, treated a particular type of way, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So I shouldn't look at it as, well, this is, I'm unique, I'm special, you know, I had a certain experience, I'm going to separate myself, you know, what we would call the African diaspora, I'm going to separate myself. Because the reason why I make that point is that I know it can cause some confusion, and one part of that obviously is going to be the mixing part, right? So you're dealing with Europeans, you're dealing with, for the most part, you're dealing with Europeans, and you're dealing with the clash of the African. So you produce this person who may have more or less of one of the two, but falls in obviously based off of the system of racism. So when we're thinking, and I don't want to get too far off what we're talking about, of course, though. But when we're thinking about how we want to try not to divide, do you think that using the destination concept is very important versus trying to tie myself to something specific within the environment, knowing how false and how fraudulent the environment itself is, even though it's a very real and a very dangerous place?
Yeah, and I think that comes with the overall understanding of what has been done globally to people that are classified as black, and having an understanding of what whiteness means as far as what they have done to classify other people as black. That's very important. I think that in terms of coming to grips with the reality of what the violence that took place, the mistreatment that took place, the mistreatment that we do to each other based off whatever our experiences or beginnings are, the language that we use on a regular basis to describe other victims of racism, white supremacy, especially those that fall into the definition of being black. And empathy at the very, very beginning of somebody's experience needs to be acknowledged. I think that if we do not state that from the very, very beginning, it causes misunderstandings from the very, very beginning of even a conversation of trying to gather, on a united front. How can you unite and be able to gather with someone that has a different experience from you when you feel like they're totally different than you, even though you guys fall under the same classification? And then there's some kind of negative connotation, whether you say, well, these people don't understand me because, you know, they think they're better than me because they're from the Caribbean, or they talk Spanish, or they speak Spanish, or you know how they are, or you know how they do. The people that are here in the States, you know, they're very ignorant. They're not very educated. They don't know what's going on globally. People that's here in the States, they'll say, well, you know how people that's from the continent, you know, they treat us like they don't like us. You know, this and that other. And guess what? We're not ending up doing. We're not examining and studying white people. And I guarantee you, the person that you see that's here, that's from somewhere else, they have been devastated by white people. It's just a different way that they have done it. And, you know, they have a different experience. So, you know, instead of coming together and having an understanding from, you know, both point of views, we divert and then we separate. And then we use that as a vehicle to get into, you know, name calling, you know, like how we discussed on a previous program. And I mean, you can see it even in the conscious community right now. You know, there's a lot of back and forth about disagreements as far as like, of course, money. But, disagreements as far as like who has the right information. My information is right and exact. You don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. Then, you know, the C word, your coon, your Uncle Tom, your agent for white supremacy and all that. So that ends up hampering us at the end of the day. So, hopefully, you know, when people listen to our program, they know that we're coming from a place of trying to gather understanding between victims of racism and white supremacy.
I think destination is a very good term, and I think I would liken it to an actual destination that you would travel to abroad. And obviously, if you're a wise and prudent traveler, you would research the customs, not only the customs, but also maybe look into possible medical attention that you may need prior to visiting that particular destination. So just to give that analogy, that just means from what Dee was talking about in regards to developing that understanding and realizing that not every destination is the same. Not everyone you know, as he alluded to, not everyone would even agree that they're been forced into the classification of black, never mind whether they actually believe that they're black or not. The fact of the matter is that person may actually be forced into that classification of black. So just having the understanding that their arrival at that point is going to be largely, they're hugely different from one person to another. And if the dialogue takes place prior to getting into constructive thought, speech, and action, then I think it will make for a more, obviously, a more constructive process.
Yeah, very, very good points. Very good points. Have either of you been keeping up with what's going on over in Syria?
Oh, absolutely.
As far as just from an image, I don't, you know, like I said, I'm sort of, if y'all already know that I'm trying to avoid, you know, basic, you know, media generally speaking, but I did see a few pics of, I think it's Aleppo, as far as just some visual images of it, and I had said to somebody, that would be a nice image to have in this nation. The problem with that thought when I made the statement, though, is that sounds ridiculous, right? Who would want their place that they live, regardless, right, of the benefits of the white power structure, could you be in that type of environment? Number one. Number two, as far as the people that you see running away trying to find refuge, men, women, and children, all ages, majority, minority, people who are fighting, you know, 1%, 2%, maybe less, the people who are actually arming themselves and fighting against the system of racism. So do y'all have any thoughts on that?
Well, I've been to, just speaking in the DMV area, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. I've been to parts of Baltimore, Maryland, that look like, I mean, it's close to Aleppo. Not that far off. I mean, hollowed out buildings, boarded up, entire blocks that are just vacant. You know, overgrown weeds. I mean, and then if you go, it's like a tale of two cities. You go downtown to the harbor area. I mean, it's just amazing. So I think we have examples of that, but obviously it's not something that is shown. The imagery is not shown in what people would call the mainstream media.
Where are people running to for refuge?
Well, we do know that from according to reports, they're bringing a lot of refugees here, perhaps in Europe.
I mean, people like in Baltimore, for example, right? They kind of show the contrast, well, right? So, do we have an example where, instead of the cities being bombed out, basically, right, hollowed out, bombed out, then you have a mass amount of people who are now, you know, in the millions, who are supposedly refugees who are escaping, you know, to Turkey and to other places. Is there a comparison to that here, where you're seeing people from Baltimore or from other cities having to escape, you know, going to look for refuge, trying to get out due to the environment?
Absolutely. I think a lot of it is moving to the counties, and that might even be, you know, if it's not being, people are not being locked up in mass, you know, to clear out those areas, or either that, or they're moving out to the county. You know, they may have been a policy where they say, look, we're going to gentrify the cities, we're going to bring in lots of money, lots of capital, and redevelop these cities, make them into smart cities, and we're going to follow the UN Agenda 21 program and rewild the rest of America. You know, we're not going to have any of these suburban city, these outcrops of the city.
Do you see any comparisons to where you take a place like Syria, for example, it gets terrorized by Europeans, Russians, the West, America, etc., get bombed out, the people have to escape to those exact same countries, then the person who runs the country supposedly is under threat by this nation, by the rebels. Do you see any ties to that environment versus the environment here? As far as them attacking the leaders, as far as them painting the leaders as and I hope I'm not getting too far off subject, but just wanted to get your thought on, as far as, you know, maybe painting the leaders a certain way, et cetera, supporting certain groups, creating dissension, creating confusion, et cetera.
I would say the instead of having, well, I mean, you have troops, the standing troops in the cities are the police force. So that's part of it. And then you have the drugs that are brought into the communities. Obviously, people classified as black don't have large amounts of capital or even the logistics to move drugs, okay, throughout the country as it's happening. So it's coming from somewhere. But that is another method to clear out these areas and create a refugee crisis. But that's a very interesting correlation you make there, which hasn't been made. If it's been made, I haven't heard it. But that's a great one. In terms of leaders, that's another one. I mean, most of our leaders or people who have been presented to us as leaders have been either co-opted or assassinated. I don't know that there's, and maybe you gentlemen can share, but I don't know that there's a single body of leaders that we can look to. I mean, does anyone have any names? I mean, if so, then those are the individuals that we could use to, as an example, to best answer that question about, you know, as far as the correlation between Syria and this nation, how Assad, for example, in Syria has been is the new boogeyman. And if we have that same example here, do any you guys know of anybody here that you would considered to be a leader of the so-called black people, the black community?
No, I can't think of it off the top of my head. DC, did you have anything or know anyone?
No, I don't. Do you guys want to take the caller that's online, see if they wanted to share their thoughts, or I don't know if they... that they raised their hand to speak or something of that nature. So hello, caller, would you like to share your thoughts on the topic so far? If you want to join, all you have to do is just hit the star twice, star star, to join in the conversation.
How you guys doing? I was just listening. I was just listening to the show for now.
Oh, okay. No problem. But yeah, as far as like the international dealings and how the U.S. is dealing with Syria and, you know, other places abroad where there are people of color, and some of the agreements that they have made with people in the, you know, especially on the continent. I was just watching, this is sort of like in that same vein, I was watching a documentary called The Empire of the Dust. Are you guys familiar with that? Where it talks about China going into the Congo to build an infrastructure. And you guys are familiar with that documentary?
Yeah, I heard something about it.
Yeah, so basically, it just shows the distance as far as like how things have basically been, you know, dominated and destroyed as far as the way of living for victims of racism that are from the continent, and how it makes it seem like we're unable to handle our own affairs. And I attribute all of that to the system of racism, white supremacy. You know, the way that even so-called Asians, which they don't fall under the classification of white, but you know, you could just even see how they was basically talking to, you know, some of the workers, some of the people that they was doing the translations. It was just straight up disrespectful. You know, the Dillons, like they actually are you know, looking at us in the position of being almost like subhuman almost. And you know, it's unfortunate because in the larger scope of things, you know, this particular person is not a white person, but they come off like someone that is you know, practicing racism. And it's just the way the planet is, it seems like things can't get resolved without extreme violence, unfortunately. And when people have to get together and, you know, to express themselves in a way that where they can actually have agency over their life, livelihood, and their way of living, that's something that has to be fought for. You know, this is not something that you can just kind of like discuss, not unless you're willing to live under the subjugation of, you know, someone else's way of governing you. And that's unfortunately where we're at right now as far as the system of racism and white supremacy. They have made it to the point where if you're going to go against it, you're going to have to be able to either get a mass amount of people to stop participating in the system, to where it will basically fall apart, because it's all based off a mental you know, coercion, so to speak. I call it the seduction of white supremacy for the few victims of racism, small few victims of racism that practice within the system and benefit from the system, to keep the larger groups of non-white people subjugated, or direct conflict. That seems to be the only way to neutralize this group based on how the system has been basically set up. So, you know, when we get into discussions of solutions, the reason why it's so hard is because, and this goes back to, do black people benefit from the system of racism? It keeps going back to that question. Yes, there's going to be people that benefit from the system of racism, white supremacy, because we have people that are compromised, that fall under our classification, that live very well within the system of racism, white supremacy, and don't want anything any different. Don't want any different way of living. Everything is perfectly fine in their eyes. You need to get out and get an education, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, move to a different location, do what you got to do to make life better for yourself. What are you complaining about? You're a negative person. You know, you got all kinds of different ways that victims, you know, of racism that benefit within the system knock you down, so to speak.
But can you compare Mr. Fuller's logic codification versus the benefits, meaning that we know you're compromised, we know you're going to benefit from the system, it's designed in a way to adapt and adjust to maintain control over non-white people. Obviously, we have the history to prove that. So is it an individual codification because of the compromise, or is uniting isn't necessarily a solution but a path? Because clearly the solution, I always have to, you know me, I'm at 1,000-year mark or 500-year mark as far as thinking about dealing with this group, waiting for the empire to collapse on itself, power vacuum, and then it's time for us to rock and roll. So whenever that happens, it could happen sooner than later, but I think that everyone thinks it's way soon. I'm thinking centuries. It's already been about two, well, maybe just one, but at least the last 100 years, we would say. But just a comparison between codifying, individual, making sure that you have a certain process on how you deal with the environment versus a solution-driven philosophy that tends to benefit non-whites from a possibly economic perspective, also being followed by non-whites, but detrimental in a larger scheme because of who actually controls, who actually has absolute control, because it's obviously their system.
T, you wanna jump in on that?
Yeah, I can share my thoughts on that. just right quick though, and I'll get to that. I just want to throw in that in recent memory, I want to make a correction to what I said previously. In recent memory, only time I can think of that non-white people, in other words, people classified as black, were referred to as refugees was in Hurricane Katrina. That was the first time I actually saw it on the so-called mainstream media, stateless persons. But anyway. In regard to your question, Paradox, so basically it looks like from what you're saying, you're looking at people who codify themselves according to a certain doctrine and how to operate within the system with the understanding of that we are dealing with an unjust system versus those who, I guess, more so capitulate and simply adorn themselves or simply, you know, take the benefits of what the system has offered them, if I understand your question correctly.
Correct.
So, with that in mind, and I don't think that's something that has been discussed at length, but that's a great question, and I think that even within those two groups of thought, there is a lot of opposition, because on the one hand, you might have the individual, the person classified as black, who is so-called upwardly mobile within the society. They have all the trappings of someone to look to as being successful versus someone who opposes the system the best they can, but still is forced to participate just to make ends meet, pay bills, eat, you know, put a roof over their head. Those two factions alone can keep each other in check and not pose a threat to the system overall, because on the one hand, the person who is upwardly mobile, so-called, they can say, well, you know, I don't, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, of course, but I'm speaking from the position, essentially, of someone who is that person who is upwardly mobile, and they would say, well, why shouldn't I take benefits when black people are this, they don't do that, and I don't see the state of black people changing anytime soon, so I'm going to do everything I can to provide for my family within the system, because you all aren't going to change it. You don't have any army, no navy, air force, you don't have economics, you don't even have your own schools, you don't have any of that stuff, so why would I not capitulate? You know, I want to live a comfortable life. So I want to, you know, make sure my family has the best of everything. And then you pit that against the other individual who simply codifies their behavior and tries to operate in a certain manner that's not detrimental as best they can to their own people. And they will look at that and then possibly get into name calling, what we discussed on our past show. You know, call them a coon or, you know, bootlicking, whatever. And so within that play, those two people have already neutralized themselves in the system. So those are my thoughts on that particular dichotomy.
And that is exactly what I'm talking about. The conflict that we have so often when we discuss these issues is that Not only do we not, we have the inability to learn how to disagree and then to move forward, we have the inability to even begin to form a single thought pattern with even the ones that we do agree with. So even the ones that we so-called are aligned with, there's also confusion and dissension because of monetizing everything. See, and that's what I mean by the seduction of the system of racism, white supremacy. It's almost like, you know, you got people that are trying to go into the consciousness of helping black people. But what ends up happening is if you get a certain amount of followers and then all of a sudden you start to sell T-shirts or you start to have a program that becomes popular, your ego get bigger. You start to get paid through you know, means of people, you know, supporting your platform, which is not a bad thing. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that the way that money can seduce us and make us feel like we're helping, but then what ends up happening is that we start to think about other things outside of in the system of racism, white supremacy. See, you know, we got to ask ourselves, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to make way in this system? And I'm not talking about make way in the system just to do it in the meantime, because there's some of us that are doing that but still, you know, want to work towards ending the system of racism, white supremacy. Or do we want to just basically become how white people have come, be in charge, everything stays the same, but now it's just all black people, and then now, or people of color, and now these people are the ones that are basically enforcing mistreatment on other folks. And, you know, if it's not based on race, I don't know what can hold up, because, you know, the system that we know of is based off race. If it's based off anything else, then it's going to have a hard time holding up, because, you know, as you know, of course, you had the French Revolution, you had the Russian Revolution, you have all these systems in Europe where Europe was in turmoil during the Middle Ages and so. Back when there was no way of establishing government. There is a movie that's going to come out this weekend called Assassin's Creed, which speaks to this, where there was just basically nobody could hold power because there was assassins killing people. in power because of the corruption of government. What race does is kind of create this veil of protection, of an illusion of protection, basically. It makes things more linear, creates a underclass that's under everybody else. And so this group is going to be designated as the bottom. You know, of course, we can pick and choose some of the people that get out of this particular group, and then they can work on behalf of the system. But they're going to be the bottom group globally, period. And this is the foundation that we're going to stand on. Because if that wasn't the case, if it was based off economics, if it was based off of just pure mistreatment, because there are a lot of people that are not, that are white, that are mistreated within the system, if they didn't have whiteness, then their system wouldn't hold. The system wouldn't hold up. That's my philosophy of how the system is, and the reason why we have a difficulty of you know, damaging the system.
That is interesting. I think that it gets very disgusting. I'm going to say fantasize, which is a disgusting term, but you know, just thinking about diffraction, we're kind of getting far off the subject. I'm going to try to bring us back to some of the questions that we have set up. But I mean, I think when you fantasize or push out your thought, if a fracture takes place, what's interesting is that how many scenarios would technically happen, right? You know, would you see a self-identification process taking place very rapidly? Will people try to maintain it You know, will you, and we could spend, you know, months talking about this, obviously, or years really, or decades probably even. But, you know, if a collapse did happen, or even just a fracture where you start to see some of the West break up and start to create their own, instead of having, you know, a United Nations type structure, it may become more regional, where it's Canada and America, or half of America and parts of Canada and some of England, and just things are more, a little bit more isolated, more fractured. Other nations may. The complexity of it is that other nations that in the future will join together at some point. You know, so you will probably see some South American nations join together or go to war, Central America, et cetera. Fractures in Africa, fractures in the East as well. So I think it's interesting, because looking at the West and its power structure, globally speaking, to see pushback on a global scale, right? So on one hand, you want to see some form of pushback at the Washington, D.C. level, right? I'm from the area. I want to put an end to this environment. I want to see complete collapse and then a reset, and then everyone takes a position. You know, it's all out warfare for 1,000 years, and then we see some form of civility at that point, possibly, and then a reset of education, a reset of politics, a reset up of how you approach other human beings on the planet, how you approach the environment, etc. But looking at things on a global level, I mean, you know, if we went back 5,000 years from a regional perspective, things make more sense. Now we have to look at it really from a global perspective. So what land masses will unite to at some point say, you know what, we're tired of being oppressed at a state level, and then we want to now band together and then start to push back against the West. So, you know, I think we definitely have to elevate the thinking when it comes to the even though I know, you know, obviously color is a dominant setup, but if the system collapsed, you no longer have that setup. So then the question, like I said, then you have the vacuum, and then you say, well, what's going to fill that? Do nations now claim whatever they are outside of color, you know, or does someone say, you know what, we need to reinitiate the process? And of course, it's going to obviously look different, obviously, at that point. But those are some of the things I think we probably definitely have to ask. Some of the questions I think I would have to ask myself, just kind of thinking about the next 500, 600, 700 years, you know, going forward. What do those things look like? If no one had a comment on that, we can actually ask one of the questions that we had wrote out. I know DC had some comments about holidays, voting, etc. But did you have anything based on what I just said, or just anything in general before we jump to that question?
I would just say that, you know, just quickly, that even if the system collapsed, you're still dealing with people with sensibilities and their ideologies. So if they've been raised with the ideology based around skin color,
religion might be the default too, possibly.
Well, but that's just a control that's within the larger control system. So ultimately, skin color governs it all. Religion obviously falls within that, to me. But yeah, religion would also be a part of it. But a lot of the racist, white supremacist ideology is in across most, if all, if not all, that I've seen religion. So yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask one of these. We probably won't get to all the questions, but, you know, I thought about DC when I asked this, when I wrote this, which was, should holidays, for example, voting, et cetera, things that you do in your day-to-day life, some things that most people probably won't reject, just naturally you want to get along, you want to fit in, of course. So, you know, people who are willing possibly to even engage that part of the process, would those people when they're speaking to family members, etc., should they have a posture of being offended if someone discusses holidays, voting, regardless of the benefits? Of course, voting does tie into benefits of living under the power structure and what you can get from that. But holidays, I think, is a big one. And probably watching, even something as simple as watching TV shows, reading certain type of books, just having a certain ideology that tends to either fit you closer to whiteness directly, right? So you're dealing with someone, you're in an environment where it's not many of your quote unquote kind that's around, so you're trying to fit in a particular group, or you're within your own group and the group as a whole is pushing closer to whiteness, whatever they're trying to adopt to try to get more favor or try to get more benefits. So you're expressing their culture, which is arguably our culture. We can have that debate as well. So did you have any, because I know it is the holiday season, I want to get that in before the New Year's. I think the next program is it the 6th? I think, I forget. 2 weeks from now, so two Tuesdays from now. But I just wanted to get your thought about, while we're kind of in between Thanksgiving, what is it, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, New Year's, Valentine's Day, President's Day, Black History Month, and we're kind of in between President's Day and Christmas, right? Right, kind of in between all of those holidays to kind of swing from what, November to February, just in that box. Just to, you know, yep. If you reject it, all right. You know, if you reject it, you know, in this, I guess in the 60s, I'm not in the 60s, from the 60s. I guess if you're in the 60s, there was a small segment that was anti-war, anything that was European, tried to go more with, try to find African alternatives, and was also anti-war. Now we're living in an environment where we're pro-war, you know. Much more than I've seen historically speaking from our position or from people who are anti-war. I'm not seeing a lot of anti-war or anti-terrorist people on television, at least. But do you see, can you just kind of hit on the offensive part of the holiday environment, the voting environment, participation in general, right? We have to pay taxes. Well, some of us, if you're working, naturally you're going to pay some taxes. You know, you're going to go grocery shop and you're going to be with your family. You're going to obviously speak the language. You're going to have certain customs and cultures, specifically if you're African-American, it comes out of slavery, blended with European culture. If you're coming from the Caribbean, it's a little bit different, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just what parts of that, especially if you're trying to codify, should you feel like is offensive to you internally? And also when you're expressing things to people, you know, I wouldn't say showing yourself as a leader, but just saying that I could be offended that is offensive to me. You know how they try to use the whole liberal nonsense about everything is offensive. You can't say this, you can't say that. And I wonder, could you apply some of that in your day-to-day lives as far as saying, you know, that's a little offensive to me. I'm not really a part of that, or, you know, there's no true benefits.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, people that's been dominated by white people should not celebrate holidays, but we know that that's not a viable option. It's futile. We know that that's not a reality for most people. You know,
for many it's a stress reliever. For others, it's suicidal.
Right. Depending on what your point of view is, but for the most part, people fall in with the holidays. Either they're guilted into it, or they feel the need to use it as a buffer to you know, get in contact with people that they haven't talked to in a long time because of these so-called days that they get relief from whatever their employment is, or the so-called relief that they get from their employment. And then plus the advertising. And I think that we don't think about the damage that is done, where you continuously get programming each year about what you should celebrate and what you shouldn't celebrate. It's very, very effective. In fact, if you delve into the thought patterns of what advertising does to the brain, they have done studies on this where they can continue to just show you the same thing over and over and over again. All of a sudden, you know, it's just subconsciously. That's why, you know, when you watch commercials, most of the time it's not about the actual product. It's just tying into your brain what you have an interest in, and then whatever their product is, it's just there to use, and then that's how you get the tie into where you go to a store or you go shop somewhere, you just, oh, Coca-Cola, oh, Pepsi, oh, Tide, oh, you know, so you just automatically, you know, fall in line and do certain things because of the advertising effect. And you know, I look at the holidays the same way. They normalize behavior, even though people celebrate it in a different light. So you even have people that are of Muslim faiths that now celebrate these holidays, you know, either directly or indirectly. It makes you compromise your general beliefs, but it just shows the dominance of groupthink. And how being on the outside when things are happening with people that you love or people that you're close to, feeling that loneliness, and when everybody else is so-called in a good mood or celebrating, it's kind of hard to stand on your square and not celebrate these holidays that are basically affecting our consciousness. And basically one of the main reasons why it's hard for us to let go of some of this culture, because, you know, how can you let something go when it's that intricate and that much part of your life, especially part of your childhood? I mean, you know, you fall in love with whiteness from the cradle, basically. I mean, if you're celebrating, if you're gonna take your kids, I mean, you take your kids to a Santa Claus, and you know, most of the time it's a white man, but even if it is somebody that is black or Hispanic or Asian or whatever the case may be, you're still celebrating that culture. You know, that is celebration of paganism. That's celebrating European culture, Saint Nick or whatever you want to call him, Santa Claus. And I know in Europe, I forgot the place in Europe where they actually celebrate a black Santa Claus as a caricature of the holiday. So, I mean, it's it's brutal, man. It's brutal what they have done as far as these holidays.
But what would Very you say, brutal. What would you say to a person that feels like, well, you know, I'm I have a European bloodline, you know, I've been here for a while, I am a part of the culture, you know, is it how effective is it to reject it? You know, like, is it a waste of time? Like I can be worrying about, could I be worrying about other things and still participate with the environment? Or is there a major conflict between participating, because to some degree you have to participating in the environment versus versus isolating or alienating yourself? And what I mean by that is that science says, or just examples of us looking at our lives, that human beings are social creatures. Maybe true, you know, looks appears to be true, I don't know, but they say we're social creatures. So can you really separate, you know, can your mind, or in even looking at stress levels, separate yourself if you're not getting support, especially if the majority of your family is following the rules, or anti, you know, or what they would call illegal activity people? All same things, in my opinion, but following the rules in the system, and then you pop up and say, well, I'm anti everything, even though you're compromised because you work in, or you have your own business, you have a tax ID, however you're working the system, you are a part of the system. You know, how do you tell someone how they deal with that? You know, we've listened to Dr. Welsing at the Institute, and you know, and that's some things that she touched on from a psychological perspective, just being, and even actually even Gus, I think, has some stuff on that as well, on the cows, but just dealing with, you know, thinking to yourself, well, okay, I'm going to be a bit isolated because I've made a decision and I'm going to be not the beginning of something, but I'm going to continue being a part of the group of people, even though we're very, very, we're in the, you know, the minority of the minority of the minority. We're a very, very small group of people. We're gonna continue to codify, live our lives a certain way, even though it's going to be a challenge. Just the expectation part. You know, can you just touch on it, or you, RT, just touch on, you know, because especially people who are listening to the program, they've already made some decisions that, you know, I might participate to some degree, but I'm going to be aware. I'm going to pick my times. I'm going to make certain comments and certain statements to my mother, to my father, et cetera, to my grandparents, whoever, to let them know that what we're doing isn't correct behavior. Regardless, if you're part so-called European or white or not, you know what I'm saying? Does that, because I know for us, it's tricky. Because you have people who will default out to saying, well, you know, look at my bloodline. You know, you're getting more of that now, I think, than you probably did historically, possibly. But you kind of get more of people saying, you know, we're a mix of people. We're this. People are finding, basically, my point is that, and I want you to answer the question that I asked, but it's interesting that people have found ways to justify functioning in this environment versus thinking about how can we dismantle it, how can we put an end to it, as scary, as dangerous, as violent, and unfortunate and sad that will be because of death. Just thinking, you know, does that make sense? What I'm trying to put together for you, and you or T can answer that.
Yeah, T, go ahead, man.
Sure. I think a lot of the holidays, not all of them, at least I don't believe, are European, historically in European culture, although they may have been created or put into effect.
Perverted it.
Yeah, by right. Europeans. But for instance, like, what I was going to say is that we take some of the biggest holidays like Christmas or Thanksgiving, a lot of that for most people is wrapped up in, especially for people classified as black, is wrapped up in childhood memories. You know, like, for instance, around the time of year, I like listening to Christmas music, you know. Just based on the experiences that you may have gone through, it may put you in a certain mood, or it may not put you in a certain mood. Certain holidays, people suffer greatly in, such as Valentine's Day. You know, people are shamed into giving gifts and candies. I mean, try not to give your woman friend or your wife or your significant other, whoever it may be, try not giving them some type of gift or present on that day and see what happens. I mean, that alone speaks to the power of these holidays, which are religious type acts. And so, you know, if you take a day like, same thing with Mother's Day, take a day like Mother's Day, it's sacrilege to not get your mother something on Mother's Day. I mean, that's unheard of. I mean, I'm sure it happens, but overall, I mean, I think we all know what the results of that would be. It's not going to be good. So that just speaks to the power of how corporatized everything is. And that is the biggest benefit for corporate interests, which corporations, again, are controlled by people. But it's a large benefit for corporations to make money off holidays. I mean, now they've added even more holidays to calendars, which are unofficial, obviously, like, you know, Secretary's Day, Boss's Day, a bunch of other things that they've added, National Donut Day, all these different things that they've added, and even have supported and maintained, and basically, it seems to me like they're ramping up these unofficial holidays. For instance, like National Donut Day, you have like Dunkin' Donuts or Krispy Kreme or somebody like that offering free donuts before 10 a.m. And so a lot of people participate in that. And it seems to me like these things have been ramping up over time, so it wouldn't surprise me to see within another 10, 20 years, definitely within my lifetime, you know, God willing, that, you know, we're going to see these additional holidays that are going to be like, almost like they were always existing. Like they never, they're not going to be questioned. It's going to be something that you do. You just do it. You don't ask questions about it. And so I think that's where we're headed in that particular regard. And if you take the position that you're not going to participate in these holidays, you know, you're left in it's a serious quagmire. And so that's something that each person has to address on their own and individually, obviously. But I think it's something that should be discussed and amongst people who are perhaps aware of what's going on. I'm not saying that's necessarily going to bring a solution, but it is going to bring about a dialogue that maybe will flourish and transform into something else. But just like Paradox alluded to, a lot of the holidays are being perverted. You know, a lot of them were ancient feasts and ancient rites of passage for people from the so-called continent of Africa that have been changed to something completely different. So there you have it. And that's just my thoughts if you look at it from a perspective of how Paradox, if you look at it from a perspective of, you know, 100, 200 years from now, these things are a way to stimulate the economy. I mean, you got a lot of spending that goes on during these holidays. The more I look around, I see new niche markets that are being created for various, anything from food to decorations. I mean, they have it all. And you could literally spend, you know, hundreds, thousands of dollars in any one of those particular areas, and it would be nothing to do that. You know, just simply gratifying either that childhood happiness, trying to bring that back and use it as a coping mechanism, as DC alluded to, or just simply say, hey, you know, this is what I like to do. And you got a problem with it, you don't have to participate. And I think a lot of times we get into that discussion, it becomes a defensive response, and that triggers behaviors that obviously lead into more, more behavior that's not going to be useful in terms of changing the system.
This is The Cold Breakfast on Black Talk Radio.
Tune in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Say that white supremacy is a fragile system, that it, in order for it to be maintained, it has to be constantly monitored. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. It's like, you know, it's almost like making a space shot, you know, when people go in outer space. You have to sit there and you have to watch those consoles. You just can't walk off and have coffee and lollygag down and go somewhere and party and all like that. You have to watch everything. You have to constantly look at this and look at that. All of the areas of activity in the system of white supremacy. Check out the economics. What are these people doing? Are they opening a grocery store here or trying to open one? Has some black person dropped out of school and decided not to sell drugs and started doing something else? Well, we have him set up to sell drugs. I mean, that's what we have these people doing, because we can handle them that way. But now he's trying to, you know, he said he's not going to sell drugs. He's coming up with some type of invention. Let's get over there and find out about what this invention is, because it might be bad for our business. Our business is to see to it that he's always going to do something that's self-destructive. That's what we do. We white supremacists on this planet do not let black people do very much of anything that's going to have a constructive effect. In what area of activity? In all areas of activity, 24/7. Never let a black person get too far down that road of doing anything that's going to be of constructive value. That includes even having a constructive conversation. Don't let those black people talk about anything that makes sense. Don't let them sit around talking about anything that makes sense. Constantly monitor what black people say at the lunch table, at work. Constantly monitor what they say and guarantee that what they say is a whole bunch of nonsense. Picking at each other, gossiping about each other, or want to fight each other, want to say something derogatory about everything, want to call everything MF, MF this, MF that. Keep them in that state of mind. That way you know you got them. You got them for the next 10 million years. They'll never change, because you see to it that they don't change. If they start acting like they're changing, you get on their case. And you stay on their case till they get back in that stall where they belong, where we put them. Black people are supposed to be in a category. They're supposed to be in stalls. They are animals. And we're supposed to treat them like animals, like it said in Godfather 1. Sell them the drugs. Don't sell it to our children. We don't want to make that mistake.
I wanted to say thank you, Mr. Neely, Dr. Neely, for just offering us the logic. And I wanted to ask you, for one, is your book being used in any college course curriculums that you know of?
Not that I know of. And I think that if it shows up in a pronounced fashion, it is my opinion that it will be denounced by anybody on a college board or a high school board or a high school curricula anywhere, simply because we're in the system of white supremacy. What I'm talking about is actually getting rid of the system of white supremacy. I mean, that's pretty well in your face. And that is the only government that is on the planet that is recognized, all right, as a real government by everybody. And so if my book starts moving around in classrooms, the white supremacists, you're talking about the second area of activity, education.
Yes.
They're not out to dismantle the system of white supremacy. If they wanted to do that, they wouldn't have to wait on a Neely Fuller to come along and tell somebody it needs to be replaced with a system of justice. They could do that themselves. They could do that overnight. They could do that in 15 minutes. They have that kind of competence. Why? Because they have put together that system. They hold that system together rigidly. The system could completely disappear because they want the system of white supremacy. That's why no one who really speaks seriously about it and trying to really figure out how it's put together so it can be taken apart, they don't want that voice going around. And anybody who tries it, including me, I always say, I'm working against myself on a personal level, because if what I'm doing ever really catches on and really begins to work, I don't even know whether or not it will work, but I believe it will.
Anybody
who comes up with anything that's going to really dismantle the system of white supremacy before the white supremacists are ready for it to dismantle, that person is going to be in big trouble real quick. And when I say in big trouble, I mean trouble that can't be avoided. In other words, they'll make toast out of me in no time flat, and make toast out of every argument I've presented, because they know how to do it. They know how to distort everything. But they'll only do this if it's effective.
Yep. Is that it? I think that's it. Do y'all have any comments on that clip?
Sorry, can I be heard?
Yeah, you can be heard.
Yeah, my mute was kind of acting up there.
I hate to comment after Mr. Fuller. You know, you don't really need to say too much. He sums it all up for us.
Well, you know, Mr. Fuller always brings to perspective back, you know, and you know, what was very, very interesting was just falling back on the focus. Where he says the focus of the white supremacists is, you know, the term that he uses when he describes people that are classified as white that are dedicated to practicing racism. And when he says that, you know, they continuously put pressure on you know, victims of racism, people that are classified primarily as black, on, you know, putting pressure on them so they can behave in a certain kind of way with each other, because that way that would keep us in a divisive mode, which means that, you know, if we're in a divisive mode, then, you know, we're easier to control and everything is pretty much on autopilot. And, you know, I thought another thing that he said that was very, very interesting was that you know, working against oneself. And that's what the system you know, forces victims of racism to do, even though we're trying to basically establish a system of justice or work towards eliminating the system of racism, because primarily we know that this system is brutal globally and here domestically for other victims of racism. We are also well aware that we're going to be working against self, because just like anything, there's no guarantees that whatever replaces you know, this system, because of how brutal it took, how the brutality was to establish this system, and I think that that's forgotten about. But you know, when there is a so-called power vacuum, that of course there's going to be people that are going to operate violently to establish themselves, to dominate other groups of people. And if the system of racism falls away and there's no way of distinguishing people primarily through race, then something else will probably take its place. And that's why I stand with Mr. Fuller's idea of justice, because I think that if that is your primary goal, then you would always fight to try to establish justice. Not that it's going to ever happen, but, you know, there will always be a group of people that will try to fight for no mistreatment of anyone, period, regardless of station, identity, and the people that get the people that need the help the most gets the most constructive help, and then everybody works towards that particular idea and function. You know, there's been enough problems created by the system of racism, white supremacy, that you know, the planet itself is in disarray as far as like the pollution, the use of resources that's been basically taken out of the earth and the planet. That, you know, we can work on this for the next 1,000 years, correcting some of the things that has happened due to the system of racism, white supremacy, that all our energy can be put forth to do that. But of course, you know, this is just me speaking hypothetically, but, you know, I think that idea of justice should be fought for and should be stood for. So definitely appreciate Mr. Fuller sharing his thoughts, and you know, I stand with that idea that justice is something that we should think about replacing the system. Don't know how it will replace the system of racism, but I think that just the general idea of having justice as the primary goal is very, very important. That way you can keep it on not mistreating people, And as long as that is your idea, then whenever there is a power vacuum in place, people being mistreated, then, you know, people can then begin to work towards, you know, enforcing justice. That's just my thoughts on it.
I just wanted to say real quick, it just seems like when you say, when you're describing justice, do you think that even within this system, you start to get some form of justice, but it's limited? Because when you start to implement things like when you're trying to generate wealth, when you're trying to exploit human labor, it's like justice has a limit. Does that somehow impede the full breadth of justice, you think?
Well, it just depends on, you know, what you want your definition to be. But I think that there is a working limit to justice right now, and it fits into the realms of into the vows of racism, white supremacy. They have been able to fit it into the court system, fit it into the workplace. To a lot of people, this is the best system going, but, you know, they fail to understand, or people fail to understand, what preceded this system. The reason why you have this system is because World War II was fought, World War I was fought, the Civil War was fought. This was not an easy transition. So, of course, you're going to say, well, this is the best that we have, because this is the bloodiest, most violent group of people that have dominated other groups of people across the globe in their way of life. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. This is something that's done by force, not no agreements. That's it, bottom line. If I'm coming to your area and I need resources because I need to build skyscrapers, or I need to build buildings, then I need to extract resources. And if you have a group of people that's on that landmass, then, hey, you're going to have to move. Hence the Dakota Pipeline. That can't be forgotten. That's something that needs to be always stated when we talk about systems.
Well, they remember something,
things of that nature.
At the human level, from the Dakota Pipeline perspective, they will offer you a job. They will allow you to assimilate into the system and allow you to be exploited. You do have that option.
Back to the seducing part of the system. You can even think of it as the, you know, Star Wars is out. You could think of it as the Force. You know, never underestimate the power of the dark side. The Force, you know, whether it goes, you know, whether towards the light side or the dark side. I hate to say it like that, but
the dark side. Whatever side. I got Jesus.
Yeah, of course. But then, do your Jesus believe in justice? That's the question. And if your Jesus believe in justice, what does that look like? Do Jesus fit in this equation? Would Jesus be out, trying to end the system of racism, white supremacy? I stand with that. Jesus would, you know, the Jesus that I read about in the Bible, or that I grew up reading about in the Bible, was a revolutionary. Basically, wasn't somebody that would sit idly by and let injustice run through the planet.
That Jesus died on the cross. The new Jesus that they've invented is more friendly to the empire from my upbringing.
Yeah. Absolutely, because you dominate everybody and you enforce that, and you basically imprint the idea of how they're going to basically worship. You can worship this way, not that way, that's going to interrupt the real religion that we practice every day, which is wake up every day, go to work, pay your taxes. That's the religion. That is what people are doing every day. I mean, we I mean, we got things that mean something on a piece of paper, for Christ's sakes. They got white slaveholders on them, the people that basically owned our so-called ancestors. Not so-called ancestors, owned our family members. So You know, that's the means of exchange. So you have Andrew Jackson, you have George Washington, you have Abraham Lincoln. You know, these people were not friends to folks that look like us. So what are we talking about here? The compromise is always in. It's always in.
I think most people go into presumption on my part, could be wrong, but this is based on my observation. Because most people go into just looking at this system as the default, that the default of the system is justice, and anything outside of that is just an anomaly. So in other words, you know, until you've experienced, until you've gone into a courtroom and been railroaded for even something minor like a traffic offense, you may not necessarily understand that the basis of the system is injustice. It's not, you know, it's not innocent until you're proven guilty. That's a fallacy that's been propagated and planted into the minds of the masses. You know, this is an unjust system. That's the default, the justice. Okay, so you know, it's amazing. Well, it's not amazing, but I understand how, if you have the view that justice is a default, I understand how people can be upset when, you know, people are murdered over nothing. And there's a mistrial, there's all types of things that happen, and people are surprised by that, because you have to have the understanding that, you know, and obviously there's things attached to that that are, you know, would emotionally drive a person, you know, just because of the tragic events that happen. But you have to understand the default is injustice. And then that way we can change our viewpoint and kind of move from there. Even down to the, you alluded to about the so-called money, paper money that we use in for exchange. Then who's on those pieces of paper? And even oppressors. The simple fact that... Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, oppressors are on the actual paper. Slaveholders, people that raped black women are on those actual means of exchange. And you're going to accept it, and you're going to like it. And you're going to accept it to the point where you sing songs about it. You revel in it. It becomes part of your culture for the love of money. Money, money, money. It's all about dollar, dollar bill, y'all. Cream. The psychosis that happens within black people. You know, there's a comment by Scotty Reed, just real quick, T. I just want to kind of make sure that we get this out. And I agree that the energy that we put in trying to participate, and I don't know if this is really what he was saying, but what I got from the gist of it, the energy that we put into trying to go along with this system is way more energy than we take into trying to end this system. And that, to me, is the primary issue, because of how we have an understanding about this particular system. See, I don't think that there needs to be a big kumbaya or everybody needs to get together. I don't think so. I just think that people just identify this system for what it is, and at that particular point, deconstruct from there within your thoughts, action, and behavior, because it's nothing without our participation. Nothing. The system wouldn't exist without slavery. Without free labor, capitalism is nothing. It doesn't exist now. That system wouldn't hold in Europe. It's no way. You wouldn't have a bottom floor of people that's the majority group that would stand for this. And they were all the same groups of people. They'd be like, nah, you mistreating everybody. You would have Assassin's Creed. You would have people, you would have special societies that would kill oligarchs on a regular basis. Couldn't walk the street. Wouldn't be able to walk around. They'll die. What's the Irish group that does the bombing all the time? What's that? What's that group called?
The IRA.
Yeah. Stuff like that. Hard to identify. You don't know the difference between these different white people. They just walk around, all of a sudden a bomb goes off. That's terrorism. but nobody really talks about them as terrorists, or, you know, they're not on the news when you see terrorism plots going on, and I know they're still active. And see, this is what I'm saying, like you know, either we live in a system of racism, white supremacy, or we don't. Either we're trying to free ourselves from it, or we're going to be complicit to no end. And that's where we're at right now. And that's the hard conversation. That's the hard conversation that we need to have.
It feels good to comply. It feels good to participate. The weight of the West is daunting. Just looking at how places like China, India, etc., bend to its will. So when they decide to put their weight on you, it's very, very, I think that the level of fear and also self-preservation plays a massive role because of the amount of pressure that can be applied in all aspects of your life, your family's life, friends, your business, whatever you're doing. They can apply a tremendous amount of pressure. I mean, these people destabilize entire nation states. So it just shows you the scale and the level of power that I cannot, you know, discuss, you know, I can't express that enough, is that the level of power that we're dealing with. So I think because of that, I think that it puts you in the level of bravery, I think, that's required. It's there, it's available to tap into, but we have to understand, I think, initially, and one of the points of the code break is to really give people the grasp that it's really the scale of power. So you would know what you're getting into, you know, when you're dealing with this environment. I think that some of our family, some people we would call them ancestors, but I feel like a lot of our family that gave their lives up until today dealing with this environment, some of them was, I think, surprised at the sheer scale of the system, the enormity of it, especially coming out of World War II, and also as something you've stated, DC, just the, you know, you're talking about a very small group of people, but by them organizing and coming together has been able to do a significant thing on the planet, which is maintaining and managing the globe, telecommunications, at the satellite space level, the waterways, all oceans being managed, maintained, controlled by either the Chinese, the Soviets, or the Americans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Just the sheer scale of power. So I think that we, you know, that needs to be clear, and I think something that we have to do, obviously, always going forward, just showing that. I think that more than, in you know, from my position, more than most things, trying our best to understand the level of power, or the scale, I shouldn't say the level, but just how large the power is, and then the agreements that they have in place with non-white people to continue to maintain their power, which ties back into, I think, a little bit of what you said. But T, did you have any, I have a couple of questions that I want to pose to you. I think that I would love, you know, the audience wouldn't mind hearing your position on it, but did you have any other comments on this topic?
No, sir. Fire away.
Okay, so one question. We won't get to all of these, obviously, but one question. I'm gonna ask you. I ask a couple of things. I'm gonna simple statement.
Paradox, just real quick. Mr. Reed, are you there? Mr. Reed.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. Could you share that sentiment from Tando about the system? I think that it needs to be shared, and I don't know if I did a good job of illustrating what you shared, and
yes,
kind of give that idea out there so it's basically understood correctly, because I think that I agree wholeheartedly with that.
David,
before we'll move on real quick.
David Wren is the host of Tando Radio Show, and the premise of that program is a prepper show. If anybody knows the terminology or what the term preppers mean, it means they prepare for the collapse of government, natural disasters. Mostly you'll see in the media, they'll showcase white people as being prepared preppers with guns and and stocking food and buying precious metals and things. So that's the premise of Tando Radio Show, to give people background, because this was not said in the context of counter racism. But it just clicked in my mind as I listened to him say that. And in my mind, when he was saying the system, I was thinking the system of racism, white supremacy. But he doesn't talk in those terms. He does acknowledge racism and white supremacy, but he looks at the system from a global partnership, something like what Paradox was talking about earlier, where y'all talking about partnerships between nations and stuff like that. That's what they focus on. They focus on all of this sort of current events and things of that nature. So this is what he said about the quote unquote system. He said that the system stays in place because the people who benefit from it the most devote more of their energy, and energy is your being. That's you, your body. When you go to a job, you're giving your energy to that employee so that you can then get a return on some of that energy, what we call a paycheck. Then we give that paycheck that energy and transfer. And he said the people who benefit the most from the system, the people who are in charge of the global system, they devote more energy and resources to keeping that system in place and things the way they are. They give more of their energy than the people who are negatively impacted by the system. We don't devote collectively, and I was thinking about Dr. Welsing saying the simple fact that white people numerically are the global minority. So just on that alone, that fact alone, non-white people, period. We go by Neely Fuller's system, or his description of the system. You have white people, non-white people, and white supremacists. So numerically, there are more non-white people. So that makes sense that we have more energy collectively and resources. But we don't devote the majority of our energy and resources to dismantling the system. If I use the paycheck example, maybe I'm not investing in counter racism, whatever that activity may be and whatever form it comes in. I'm devoting, let's say, maybe 20% of my paycheck towards that, my energy, which represents my energy. And then I'm devoting maybe 50% on entertainment, like going out on the town, taking in a basketball game, going to the movies. So look at it like that. And it's simple, but it makes sense to me. The white, in counter racist terms, white supremacists, although they the minority on the planet, give more of their energy and resources to keeping white supremacy in place than the victims give their energy towards dismantling. It was that simple to me, and it clicked, and I agree with him in that, even though he wasn't talking about it in the context of white supremacy.
Yeah, I guess I do divert a little bit, but I do understand the premise. I do believe that if we looked at it as all of us being as a group, of course, non-white people don't look at ourselves in a solidarity type of mindset. And if this group that has classified themselves as white, because I do believe that they stand on whiteness, if you look at the first world countries on the planet, to me, that's what that means, that they will fight for this and that there will be, bloodshed and wars, that, even though, we do give energy and things of that nature, the positioning on the planet as far as how they have done militarily, they have created a situation where if we are not in solidarity with each other as a group, as far as non-white people, even people that have fallen to the classification of black, even if we can't get together, then, it will become very difficult to, go into a solidarity thing. I mean,
one thing David said,
I guess you can wing it by yourself, but, it will become difficult, dealing with the system.
But Tando Radio Show, the reason that I think it's valuable to listen to that, even though he's not talking about racism, white supremacy per se, he's talking mm-hmm. about the system and how it works. I could say he's talking about the system in codified terms, where you wouldn't know he was talking about white supremacy, but he talked about it. But militarily, see, I do a strictly politics show, so military falls under politics because that's who send people to war, is politicians. But the Chinese is the number one military superpower on this planet. And they just made a threat based off of Donald Trump violating the One China policy, which white supremacists have agreed to not poke the bear and recognize Taiwan as a separate country. That has been a policy since Nixon, with Trump calling or taking a call from the Taiwan. You see, they just seized one of their underwater drones that the United States Navy had going there, but they threatened to even fund the enemies of the United States internally. So they, to me, you could take that as all the non-white people, we'll give them weapons. We'll get weapons in the country. All the shipping comes from China. That wouldn't be hard to do. So we had to stay abreast of military specific things in order to get the correct information. But white people are, look, I want them to keep fighting wars because now it's more them dying than being born. And that's a fact. So they destroying themselves, in my opinion. But China, a billion people, they can afford more casualties than the United States. They don't want to mess with China.
Interesting. Okay. Paradox, you have you want to move on to the... Thanks for sharing that, Mr. Reed. I appreciate it.
I was thinking about, based off that conversation, I was thinking... How many, only got a few minutes left here, but I was just thinking, is there more non-white people in support of whiteness, as far as like, would you find more unification between whites and non-whites versus the groups of non-whites together, as far as, you know, percentages? Would you find there more places on the planet to support that group, the West, or would you find there more groups of people on the planet are anti-West? Interesting. It's something to think about. But the question I have for T, but I don't know how much time we have left. Okay, so we got about 20 minutes, I think. But T, so real quick, if you have any comments on that statement, because we can definitely have a conversation about China versus the West in the future, of course. Definitely good discussion. Did you have anything, T?
No, I think that's definitely a good conversation. I think it'll call for more time for discussion.
Right. But I will say, before I ask this question, that white people, the West, dominate this planet, and it's not even anything second. It's no 1 second from my perspective. T, for you, I'm gonna make a general statement, which is, who can we free? You know, what does that mean and why? You know, I know that's a very basic statement. I know you can probably get kind of detailed on that if that makes any sense to you. When someone makes these statement-based solutions, possibly, which is, you know, can you free people, or what does freedom look like? Did you have anything to say on that?
Yeah, I mean, I would go back to what I've alluded to before, and that's the fact that freedom is a very abstract word. It's not concrete at all, in my opinion. So you would have to actually... So, for example, so I would ask you and say, well, unfortunately, you have to answer a question with a question, I think, in that instance, and I would say, well, what do you consider to be freedom? You know, that would be my question. That would be the best way that I can try to at least offer you some modicum of a solution, or even hope, or some way to codify yourself. Is freedom? I mean, is there any civilization anywhere But let's say even if there was, and this may be getting a little far out, but let's say if there was a civilization on another planet somewhere, another universe, another solar system, are there rulers, quote unquote, in every civilization? Is there any civilization out there where no one rules, it's just everyone doing for themselves, and no one has any say-so or any type of leadership, quote-unquote leadership responsibilities? I don't know. You know, that. So I don't think you can be freed in this system in the sense of, I think most people think of freedom as, in this system, as having money, or at least having access to money.
So when someone says, I want to free myself, or I want to, that statement, do you consider it either too broad or not specific enough, or the question itself doesn't really allow you to get to a place to where you can identify the problem, you know, and kind of work around that, you know, kind of work around the problem itself. So someone would say, well, you know, freedom is having the ability to vote and pick people to run things. You know, I feel like that's, so it, I guess it's, it could be layers, I guess you would say, to freedom, basically, right?
Absolutely, different layers. And someone could say, well, you know, it could be something as simple as, well, I don't want to have to be terrorized or, you know, by police, or, you know, live under suspicion, or live, you know, with the idea in the back of my mind that I could be shot down at any moment. You know, I want to live a stress-free life. That could be freedom, you know, or it could be I want to be able to buy whatever I want or have any type of material access that I want. And that, I think that is also not a monolith, you know, in regards to that word. And that's why the word is so dangerous.
So you can be free and in prison at the same time. It's the problem with that sentence.
Right. I mean, it starts in the mind. I mean, slavery, or let's just say freedom, or the idea of freedom, starts in the mind. And typically, even in this type of system, it's based on that word freedom is based on your level of subjugation, ironically. So in other words, depending on how subjugated you are, you know, if I'm behind bars in prison, my idea of freedom is getting the hell out of prison. You know, so I can, or at least that's what we would think. At least I'm not behind bars at this moment. So that might be my idea of freedom. I can't say that is someone behind bars' idea now, you know, but it could be anything at any time. So I think it has to be vetted out and again, it starts in the mind, because it's all going to be based on where you are within the system.
That's what I mean. I wonder, is the using the word freedom is a, you know, you're kind of chasing a ghost in a sense, a concept that's been released into the environment that isn't a real thing. Like, there's literally no such thing as it, in a sense, but it is something to chase, right? You know, so like, to feel restriction and then to create an environment where you put a concept in place called freedom gives you something to, for your entire lifetime, to chase after, possibly. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. It modifies your, you might have an original purpose to what you came to this planet for, but it can become co-opted based on usage of language, you know. The ideal people strive to, the idea of freedom, liberty, justice for all. Though that's in the Pledge of Allegiance, but we're not seeing that as a broad stroke across all levels of society here.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I always think about certain concepts that get introduced into the environment to maintain control. And I sometimes wonder, it may not be true, that a lot of the concepts that we spend time dealing with is just another form of being, it's just a form of burning time, right? You know, you get about 60 to 80 years to function on this planet. If you are somewhat codified, you can transfer some of your data to the next, to your children or your relatives or someone that's younger than you to continue to transfer the data. But you know, that's the only way we can really, only way we can truly move information is human to human, you know, older to younger interaction. I think that's one of the major, not the only way, but one of the major ways to transfer certain types of information. And so I want to do some of these concepts, disrupt that process, and also assist in maintaining their system that they put in place. So like you said, freedom, justice for all, Lady Liberty, all these concepts built around an old environment to create a new environment to put concepts in place to maintain some form of order. DC, did you have any comments on that? We got about 11 minutes.
Yeah, I want to speak to, you know, kind of the audience. And if I was listening to this program, I know that it can seem like, you know, we waxing poetic about ideas and thoughts that are not very helpful when it comes down to combating the system, because a lot of the things that we think about are generally right in front of us, or, you know, how can it help me today? What can I do? You know, I'm not a victim, I'm a victor, you know. So let me just base some things in reality really quick. There's going to be this movie that's going to come out called the Planet of the Apes, and it's a very, very simple premise. It was a book written by a French author back in the 50s, and it was real simple. The dominant species on the planet became the apes. As has always been, there's not that many white people on this planet. That's never really been the case. That is not the reason why they dominate this planet, in my opinion. The reason why people that are classified as white, the reason why victims of racism speak English, the reason why we no longer live under tribal affiliation is because this group classified themselves as white and went about the business of dominating everyone on the planet that they classify as not white. It had to become a system. So when we say that it became a system, what does that mean? That means basically everything is elevated that is white, and everything is devalued the darker it is, and that is falls out the classification of so-called whiteness. What does that mean? That means that this is what's going to be fought for. Unfortunately, they have seduced. That's what I'm going to call it. So instead of saying sellouts, I would use the word seduce. They have seduced victims of racism to fight in their militaries and to give time and energy to support their brutal system. Is that anything or anyone of outside forces decide to fight this particular system or this group of people, that there will be a significant number of people that are not classified as white that will fight to the death for this system. What's my proof of that? All right, we can already start at the American Revolution, Crispus Attucks. We can start at the Spanish American War. We can start with the Buffalo Surges and the extraction of things of that nature. We can start with the Civil War in the Northern Regiment and the Southern Regiment of black people that fought for the Southern armies and the Northern armies. We can start in World War One, World War Two, even though the armies were segregated. I mean, where people experienced the most brutal effects of racism, was willing to die for this country. Can you imagine what victims of racism are willing to do now? And the reason why I say this is quite simply is that they have been able to identify a psychological hold on how to basically force victims into what I call nationhood. And I think the nationhood is very, very dangerous with victims of racism when you claim a certain landmass which shouldn't belong to any human being. The planet, which is basically the third rock from the sun as far as what they have told us, there shouldn't be no ownership of it. Because if you try to own something that you have no tie to, and this includes everyone, then you have to fight for it. And if you have to fight for it, then you have to dominate other people for it. So that gives people the excuse to mistreat. That's sort of like what my final thoughts are going to be about it, but I just want people to just really, really, really take a second to think about what was needed and what was done to maintain this system. Look at all the wars that were fought. Look at all the lives that have been lost. Look at all the mistreatment that took place. And then with that, then we can kind of get to developing maybe a way of having a real conversation about what this brutal system is. This is D. That's my thoughts.
Oh, strong thoughts. Interesting thoughts, I would say. A lot to process, a lot to digest. You can always hit us up on Code Breakers 191 on Twitter. You can always email us at codebreakers 1999@gmail.com. You can always find us on Black Talk Radio, as well as you can download our podcast on Black Talk Radio, as well as I think TuneIn Radio and some other and Stitcher, etc. T, did you have any other comments you wanted to make before we close up?
I just want to say that to add on, freedom equals benefits, and benefits equals freedom. So ponder on that, and I mean that to me would sum up, you know, everything I think that we've discussed tonight.
I think so. I think so. And again, the title of our program was "Do African Americans Benefit from Living Under the White Power Structure?" And we did discuss a few topics on expressing blackness. You know, who's in charge? Who's in control? How do we feel about voting? Etc. Just to kind of summarize what we discussed, we are pretty much at the end of the program. This is the end of 2016, so you will hear us, I think, going into 2017, our next program coming up in a couple of weeks. This is Paradox.
This is D.
This is P.
Until next time, peace.